Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be learning Ezra Perek Zion, the 7th chapter of the book of Ezra. Our Perek is 28 Pesukim long, and it should be important for us to realize that although this is Sefer Ezra, we have not yet met Ezra at all. Up till now, the first 6 or 10 Prokim are dealing with the history up till the moment of Ezra. Now we get to meet him. This is Enter Ezra. So let's take a look at this. The first 6 Pesukim give a context of who Ezra is. We're told, Achara dvarim o'ele, after these matters, b'malchus Artachshasta, at the times of the kingdom of Artachshasta, the king of Persia, Ezra ben Saroya ben Azaria ben Chilkiah. It describes Ezra, and it goes back in the Psukim to go back all the way to his lineage from Aaron HaKohen HaRosh, the son of Aaron, the head Kohen, the head priest. All the way through pasuk after pasuk of description, the Metzudas even points out, if you go to Sefer Divrei Yamim, it even skips a few generations to get all the way back to Aaron. So this is, but it's clearly connecting him to Aaron HaKohen. Then it describes at the end who Ezra. This is Ezra Alami Bavel, who made a aliyah from Babylon. V'sofer mohir, he is a counter or a scribe who is precise, who is quick. The Torah Moshe in the teachings of Moses, Asher Nasan Hashem Elokei Yisrael, which was given, the books of Moses were given by Hashem, the God of Israel, Vayitin Lo Hamelech, Kiyad Hashem Elokov Olov Kol Bakashosoi, and Hashem made it that the king of Babylon gave him everything he wanted. We'll see just how much that everything is in a moment. A few things to contemplate on. Number one, why all this emphasis on his lineage? We don't do this to too many other people in Tanakh. We would go all the way back to where they come from. Why is this significant? The Chidah quotes the Arizal, who says that Ezra, in fact, is a Gilgul, is a returned neshama of Aaron HaKohen, of Aaron the High Priest, which is why it's delineating where he came from. In fact, the Arizal goes so far as to say that Ezra, Aaron, came back in another form as a Gilgul of Eli HaKohen at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, which is why he died when he fell off his chair and broke his neck. That was, in a certain sense, an element of the kapora for the Chet HaEgel Avodah Zarah that he caused, even though in his lifetime he did not receive it, in his second lifetime he did. And the full completion of his role was found in Ezra. This is significant in a number of ways. This explains why he's connected back to Ben Aaron HaKohen HaRosh. It also explains why he arrives, as we're going to see, in Jerusalem on the 1st of Av, which is explicit in the Pesukim, which is the yard site of Aaron HaKohen, and he leaves on the 1st, or he starts his mission on the 1st of Nisan, which is when the two sons of Aaron died, and what this is going to act as a precipitating moment for the opportunity of Ezra making it back. So that's in terms of the context. Now, let's just take a little further. What does it mean that he's a sofer mahir? He is a quick scribe. The Ralbag says this indicates great wisdom. Mahir means to say that he was very fast. He was able to solve ideas. And he was also moneh b'mihirut harayot asher yakimu ladat me'elu. He was able to discern ideas very practically, very quickly, to accumulate the ideas and amass them into practical kernels of information to be used in the way that it's necessary as a leader. The Gemara in Sanhedrin learns something else out of this pasuk. On Daf Chof Aleph from Abayis, the Gemara tells us in the name of Yossi that Ro'oi Hoya Ezra Shetinasein Torah Al Yodol Yisrael Ilmolei Loikodmu Moshe. If it were not for the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu preceded Ezra, the Torah could have been given through Ezra HaSofer. Now, that obviously relates to Arizal's point of Aaron HaKohen being the neshama in Ezra. There's a certain element of the dual leadership of Moshe and Aaron, and part of the neshama of Aaron obviously was worthier in a certain sense than Moshe, but Moshe Rabbeinu did get it. We know that this was part of the debate that Moshe Rabbeinu had with Hashem in Parshas Shmos as to whether he or his brother should be the leader, in fact. The Malbim also points out that in this pasuk, you see over here that this relates directly to the three teachings of Shimon HaTzadik, who is one of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, which Ezra was a part of, and the three teachings he teaches us at the beginning of Pirkei Avos are Al Shlosha Dvarim Ma'olam Oimed. There are three things, or there are three pillars the world stands upon: Torah, that is the teachings of Torah; Avodah, which is service or prayer; and gemilas chasodim, kindness to one another. And he points out that the three leaders that we've been looking at or are looking at are going to be representative of those ideas. Zerubbabel and Yeshua, Kohen Gadol, built the base of Migdash, which is the Amud HaAvoda, which is the pillar of service of God. Afterwards is Ezra, who established the Amud HaTorah, which was the teaching of the Torah. And finally, Nehemiah, who set up the walls of Yerushalayim and created a society which could work with one another, with a society which had a social rubric. That was Nehemiah, the Gemilas Chasadim, thereby completing that picture. How long did this occur after the previous chapter? It is interesting to note the Pesukim say, Vayhi, it says, Achar Hadvorim Ha'ele, after these matters, which leads the Chazal to believe that this was the next year. So, in fact, the way that the Gemara describes it in Erchin, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, is that this is referring to the year afterwards. The year after the building of the Beis Hamikdash is when Ezra is coming up, and this is immediately following. So therefore, if that is the case, Artach Shasta, the king described here, must of course be Darius. Darius the Persian was a long ruling king, and this is what's being referred to over here. That's what Ibn Ezra suggests, that's what Rashi goes with based on this. However, it should be worth noting, as has been pointed out numerous times in the Sefer, that there is a different count of years based on the academic calendar, based on the annals of Persian history, and that is, according to the Persian annals of history, after Cyrus the Great was Cambyses II, his son, and the whole episode of the first Sitna, went, according to Josephus, occurred with Cambyses II. There was a lesser-known king called Bardia in between. That's less relevant for us because he ruled very, very shortly. But there was Darius I, who we're talking about. But following Darius I was a king called Xerxes I, and then Artaxerxes. Artaxerxes, many attribute to be Ahasuerus. But Xerxes is the king over here that is being described according to Josephus. If you look in Antiquities, the way he understands it is Artaxerxes refers to Xerxes I, who is very favorable towards the Jewish people, which is why he's about to issue the edict he does. According to this line of logic, the Dat Mikra points out, Rav Mordechai Zer Kavod, that this would be 57 years later on, which also does make a lot of sense in terms of the landscape that Ezra arrives to. We will see that Ezra is going to find a great amount of disappointment. There's going to be a lack of knowledge, a lack of following Hashem, assimilation, and intermarriage, all kinds of difficult things. That would almost seem that there's been a decadence, which takes time to arrive at, which lends itself more to the perspective of a longer time. Again, for a greater discussion as to how to consolidate the two calendars. Now, let's see what actually happens. So Ezra, in Pesukim Zayin to Yud, we're told that Ezra gathers together the priests and Leviim and Yisraelim and the whole business, and he gets them all together in the seventh year of Artaxerxes, assuming this is Darius according to Chazal, and they come to Yerushalayim in the beginning of the fifth month. So you start their journey in Nisan, and then they start moving up, and they actually get to Israel or Jerusalem on the first of Av. And it describes, because he wanted to teach the Torah of Hashem, La'asois ulelameid b'Yisrael choik u'mishpat. He wants to drush the Torah to teach, to regulate, and to establish law. Did they get permission for this yet? The Rambam says no. The reason why it started in Nisan and it took until Av was because this is the amount of time it was necessary for Ezra to meet the king and to make his impression upon the king for this request. And that's the gap that we're talking about here. So what is the response to this? If we look in Pesukim Yud Aleph to Chavav, we see the Aramaic letter of Artaxerxes. This is one of the most remarkable letters to see of the powers of the world as it relates to the Jews in all of Jewish history. It is really remarkable. Remember, we've seen Cyrus's letter. We've seen the edict of Ahasuerus. We've also seen the edict of Darius. Now we see this most remarkable letter of Artaxerxes over here. This is the letter that Ezra sends via Artaxerxes, and he says, "I'm the King of Kings," and he sends it to Ezra the priest, the scholar of the law of the God of Heavens, and he says, "I hereby issue an order that anyone in my kingdom of the people of Israel and the priests who feel impelled to go to the Israel should go with you, Ezra." And then he gives commission to Ezra based on his seven advisors. We've seen seven advisors being a thing with Ahasuerus in the Megillah. and as a guide to send them to Jerusalem based on and to teach the laws of Hashem in Jerusalem. They're also allowed to bring donations of gold and silver, and any gold and silver in Babylon they can build to bring to the Beis HaMikdash. They may use the money to buy items for the Karbonos in the Beis HaMikdash, and the leftover money, he says, can be used for anything which is the will of God. He says any other needs of the temple will be supplied from the royal treasury, and he decrees that the kingdom beyond the river, that's in the north, which is the governing kingdom under Syria, may pay up to a certain huge amount of silver, wheat, wine, oil, and an unlimited amount of salt as for the upkeep needs of the Beis HaMikdash. And he says, why lest this come, let it come to ruin for him or his children if he does not do this? Then he made it clear that there's no land tax, tribute, or poll tax, which is applicable to the priests or the Levites in Israel. And he appoints Ezra to teach the Torah, not just to teach the Torah, but also to regulate society with Torah law, even to the degree of capital punishment, corporal punishment, or financial punishment for those who are living not in compliance. This is remarkable. Here you have a non-Jewish king establishing Torah law and providing the fiscal underpinnings of that society. What a remarkable moment in history. What precipitated this? So the Malbimista points out that although Cyrus had given the edict to go up, for Jews to go up and build a temple, what about when the temple is already built now? So does that mean to say that Jews cannot go up? Which is why Ezra requests this mandate for post-building Aliyah. Meaning to say, it wasn't for granted that you could just travel in the Persian kingdom and shift your residence and move your money around. This is something which required requesting. That's what Ezra was achieving now. What is this money that they're bringing? The Malbim says, if you look carefully in the Pesukim, there's three types of money that they can bring. Government funding, which is promised, donations from Jews and donations from non-Jews are all being sent to the land of Israel. Why is the king scared for his children? Pasuk Chav Gimel is a remarkable pasuk. Kol dimin ta'am Allah shmaya yisaved ar Ad Razdo lebeis Elo Shemaya di Loma leheve ketzaf al Malchus Malko Venohi. He doesn't want to have the divine wrath upon his children. Whether this means he looks back at the episode of Belshazzar at the beginning, who belittled the temple, used its kalim, and was punished, whether he looks at the Purim, according to Chazal, which has already occurred, and he sees the lessons in that, this king is unbelievably favorable to the Jews, but he realizes that his life is on the line because that's how much he believes in the God of heaven. That's amazing. Why is he removing taxes from the priests? It seems that this is the second record in the Torah, or Tanakh, of parsonage. This is where the clergy class is actually removed from the taxation of regular people. And we see the first application of this by Yosef in Parshas Vayigash, where he removes the taxation from the priestly class. And finally, after receiving this, after hearing this edict, Ezra bursts out in praise. It says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Avoseinu, Asher Nosan Kozos Belev HaMelech. Blessed be God who placed this idea into a human form, into the king. And he says, and he starts already setting up the captains and the Roshim to set up his aliyah. And we're going to hear more about it in Perek Ches. It's worthwhile noting that this, according to the dating of Chazal, this occurs roughly 1,000 years after Exodus, after leaving Mitzrayim, which means to say this is the second aliyah over here. We're going to see that it's compromised. And one of the questions we should be asking ourselves is, if you were living at this time and you heard such an edict from the king Artaxerxes, would you or would you not pick up your belongings and go? Would you be willing to get on the train with Ezra and to leave? Another question which is also worth asking is, why did Ezra wait until now? Why was he not there with the building of the Beis HaMikdash? The Medrash in Shir HaShirim Rabbah explains that it's because that Ezra was a student of the last living link in the chain to the Masorah, which was a man by the name of Baruch ben Neriah, the student and the scribe of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. And he could not leave his teacher until the point that Baruch ben Neriah was not able to go. When Baruch ben Neriah passed away, that is when ultimately Ezra makes his way up. And we're going to see why that's significant as being a part of the link of the chain as the spiritual leader. With this, we close the Perek. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.